All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, November 3rd, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everybody. It is 59 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. We're going to get into the mid-60s, and tomorrow I saw almost 70. So, like I said yesterday, I think this is our last hurrah. Snow will be coming soon. It is November in the Northeast, so that means that we're on purchase time, borrowed time. How's that? I've been having a couple technical difficulties again this morning that just about gave me a heart attack, because a minute before we went on air, the entire flash crashed on all my tabs, but it looks like it may be back now, so we are going to give this a shot. So where do we leave off yesterday? We had dug deep into some very disturbing collaborations that have been going on between Google and the federal government and DARPA. And I think we're going to dig a little bit more into that today. After the show, I did a little more research and discovered a few more things that even bother me more than everything we talked about yesterday. We titled the show DARPA Google Collusion IoT, which is the acronym for Internet of Things, tracking and hacking you. And absolutely, that is what they're doing. We looked at good old Regina Duggan, former director at DARPA, who moved over at the time to the Motorola division within Google. It now has become the ATAP, the Advanced Technology Products Division for Smart Technologies, including wearable computing, which we know that there's a new Android operating system for that. They have a collaboration going with Levi's we looked at briefly yesterday. And that wearable computing and ubiquitous computing, sensors everywhere collecting data, being able to give real-time statistics anywhere at any time is becoming a reality. But even more disturbing than Regina Duggan going over to Google, which we learned about a year or two ago already, was then when Ray Kurzweil came over as the head of engineering. I mean, we all hate to love Ray, Mr. Transhumanism himself. I'm going to upload my brain to the machine and live forever. We also looked a few days ago, one of the days last week, about all of the tech executives, the tech billionaires, who are now investing in longevity technology. And that gets into nanobots in the blood, some of the Project Calico stuff that Google has been working on, RNAi technology, and doing flipping switches on and off within DNA to effect changes or extend lives, cure aging, right? That's what Kurzweil says. They are working on curing aging. But then we saw good old DARPA Dan. DARPA Dan, the video gamer who apparently wanted to give back after 9/11 and went through the books in the library, found the number to the FBI and called them and said he wanted to hunt serial killers. Yes, that is what he said in the 60 Minutes interview we listened to with Leslie Stahl and Dan Kaufman from DARPA, and he took us through a lot of the different projects they were working on with Plan X and MemX. Plan X to be able to identify any compromise on the network and attack and destroy. And remember, that's not too much of a stretch of the imagination that it being beyond the military network and just being the internet in general, they could detect which of us has been compromised by the hacking team's backdoor exploits that they've been using to spy on people. And that is documented fact. We also looked at a little bit of the dark web and MemX and DARPA's new way of taking out child pornography and human slavery by being able to index quickly the part of the web that Google doesn't see. Well, I even found more interesting information about that and some big dots connecting to the Russ Albright conviction with DARPA dollars being dumped into Tor 2.0. So I think, though, I'm going to save that for tomorrow. because I still have more to continue on with the government collaboration between DARPA and Google. So anyway, now DARPA Dan, we find out, as of June 2015, is gone to Google from DARPA. So that of study for Google, Ray Kurzweil is very involved in that. We just had last week National Geographic do live, first time ever, brain surgery on TV. And it wasn't just brain surgery. It was brain surgery on a Parkinson's patient who got a brain implant. And how do we cure Parkinson's with a brain implant? Oh, we stimulate the brain to produce what? Oh, dopamine. Yes. The same sorts of technologies that Google has been working on to help soldiers with PTSD. So now let's take another step forward. One other thing that we saw, and I mentioned yesterday, is that the former now director of the National Institute of Health for the federal government has also taken a job with Google within their life sciences division. That is a new one that is underneath Alphabet is the heading. So we are going to have somebody within Google working on mental health issues, country medicine, the bioeconomy, the cloud computing, the online genomics, the precision medicine to cure your cancer. And you know how I've been saying this now for the longest time? The cure for cancer was that dangling carrot to get people to line up. When I was visiting my family this weekend, it's a household that keeps the TV on all day. I just can't stand it. It drives me batshit crazy. But I have to tell you that just about every other commercial was how now the new cancer centers offer personalized medicine to cure your particular cancer. And what a great success rate. And please come. We can help you. It was very disturbing. Of course, every time one of those came on, I kept pointing at my parents going, look, this is what I've been talking about. Don't fall for it. They're trying to sell it to you. All right. So from there, let's take another step forward into the collusion that is going on between Google and DARPA. There was a story that came out back in November of 2014. So this was just a few months ago. Well, no, actually, it was probably a year ago now. But it caught my attention because it had an Atlas robot on the one side. And it had Hagel, who had been our former defense director. I don't think he's in there anymore. But the title of the story was out of Gizmodo. And the title of the story, and I totally forgot about this, talking about the collaborations and the revolving door between Google and DARPA. And I bet a lot of us have. But don't forget, in 2014, Google bought 8 robotics manufacturers. And one of them happened to be Boston Dynamics, that was doing all of the work for DARPA. Yes, we forgot about that. The title of the story out of Gizmodo is DARPA Director Totally Cool with Google Taking All the Fun Toys. Now, if there ever was a headline that if you were clueless, you'd be like, oh, yeah, there's a big scary Atlas robot standing off to one side. That looks like a fun toy to me. I wish I had one of those. I mean, it literally looks like the 13th or 14th century suits of armor standing in a hallway of a castle, except it's a 21st century robot suit of armor. That looks very damn scary. And let's read this. In an interview this afternoon at the Defense One Summit, DARPA director, and this is the woman, I can never remember her name. She's very Indian. Arati Prabhakar explains the history and the future of the agency. And Parakbar wants it known that Google and other commercial enterprises are not their enemy. In fact, they are more important than ever to DARPA's national security goals. So, I mean, we're talking about Google. So this was in November 2014. The director of DARPA is saying that companies like Google and other commercial enterprises, and I'm sure like Amazon and Microsoft and who knows, probably even Walmart selling all kinds of freaky surveillance smart home technologies, are not their enemy. In fact, they are more important than ever to DARPA's national security goals. And we found out in that 60 Minutes interview yesterday with DARPA Dan that is the one criteria that DARPA has to develop something, is that it has to improve national security. Anyway, in fact, they're more important than ever to DARPA's national security goals, as private R&D spending has slowly surpassed public spending over the past 60 years. And yes, I wonder whose private spending that is. Could it be all of the tech billionaires that are investing in this crazy technology? Absolutely could be. Recently, Google has been scooping up robotics companies like Boston Dynamics. And I believe Boston Dynamics were the ones who created Big Dog and all the other cutesy little cheetahs and scary mothers that would be running through the woods chasing you with their infrared cameras. Recently, Google has been scooping up robotics companies like Boston Dynamics and vowed to exit the military robotics market. And they did. They pulled Atlas out of the competition. This has led some to wonder if DARPA has any grudges against Silicon Valley companies stealing some of the Department of Defense's favorite toys. Interviewer and Defense One reporter Patrick Tucker asked if Parakbar was worried about an innovation gap with Google and jokingly wondered if Google was DARPA's frenemy. I think they're more than a frenemy. Parakbar also almost seemed offended and was quick to explain that DARPA is in no way an adversary of Google or any other company working on technologies for commercial use. National security is not about us versus a private company. They are not an adversary, Parakbar said emphatically about Google. Ooh, he touched a nerve. Of course they're not, because we've discovered that there is an absolutely spinning, revolving, open door between the federal government, DARPA, and Google. And it gets even worse, because wait till the next story. Anyway, she continues, they and we are worried about the problems of the world, and they're going to try and go make money on it. That's what they do as a private company. And we're going to try to deal with it from a perspective of national interest, she explains. I want to harvest what they and many, many others are investing in and drive the technology forward. So what? Atlas? We're going to harness Atlas? Let's let Google make them a fuzzy one in every home, and then let's turn them all on to search and destroy. I don't know. Just what a weird quote that was. According to Parakbar, about one-third of spending on research and development in the U.S. is currently coming from the government, and two-thirds is coming from the private sector. And in the years after World War II, that ratio was flipped, she said, with about two-thirds R&D spending coming from the government and one-third from private sources. So if you look as a percentage of GDP, private sector investment in R&D has just grown and grown and grown and grown in many decades, she says. And that is the innovation economy that we are all living in. Yes, the mad science gone mad for a buck is the economy that we are living in. DARPA has always used contractors, we found out yesterday, yes, universities, PhDs, and all the smart guys, to develop groundbreaking technologies. But they clearly lean on private enterprise to spur technological advancements now more than ever. We invested in technology. DARPA could do that with the confidence that we'd have 10, 20, maybe 30 years of technological advantages over any other party. And that is not the world that we live in today. So let's just set it all loose like the 21st Century Care Act with Big Pharma. Let's take technological nanobot innovation and set it loose on the public without proper testing to get some case studies from the sick, dying, and desperate. I mean, this is what it's come down to, people. Let's get AI up and rolling before we look at how we should be banning killer robots. And there was another whole update on that about the UN. And scientists now really crying loudly that we better ban the development of killer robots, unmanned robots that will kill without human intervention and make decisions based upon an algorithm. We might get to that later in the week. That's queued up here. Anyway, back to the story. So this is not the world that we live in today. To stay ahead of technological advancement, we're just going to unleash it on the world, basically. Prakbar went on to explain that this was a fantastic development, bringing in all the corporations on the mad science technology, but that DARPA was well aware that these technologies were not being developed solely by U.S. companies for an American market. No, it's all about global domination now, baby. She went on to refer to the globalization challenge, ding, ding, that DARPA now faced in staying ahead of military adversaries. It is also an opportunity for us to not have to invest only DOD dollars to have phenomenally powerful technology, she said, evilly rubbing her hands together, as I could imagine. And when we use a semiconductor component from Altera in a DOD military system, we get phenomenal advantage riding off of the billions of dollars of investments that have already been made. Tucker made note of DARPA's role in creating the internet. I love the way they always spin that out, like to give them the top of the pyramid, all-seeing eye, like the crown jewel. They invented the internet. So don't worry, go back to sleep. And asked if they had another internet in the wings. She says, in all seriousness, we are only 200 government employees in an office building in Arlington. But that is what we come to work to do every single day, is to make the investments that might become that kind of major capability in the future. So there you have it, right from the horse's mouth. So how in bed is the federal government with Google? Well, I happened to run across a story after the show yesterday in QZ.com titled, "The White House's Roster is Starting to Resemble Google's List of Former Employees." Now, how interesting is that? And they bring up a couple connections that I didn't catch in this story. So let's read this one. At least I didn't catch originally when I had been following this progression. Hold on one second. I just clicked away and got lost. All right. The White House roster is starting to resemble Google's list of former employees at the height of the financial crisis. The White House frequently found itself turning to veterans of who? Goldman Sachs to tackle the financial emergency, leading the firm's nickname, Government Sachs. Ha ha ha. Of course, this was no accident, as then U.S. Treasury Secretary Harry M. Paulson Jr. was a Goldman alumni. Well, hey, good thing they admitted that there. Now, with the spectacular, and it sure was, initial failure, and we talked about this when this was happening, I went on ad nauseum about this, that healthcare.gov Obamacare website, you remember, Now, with the spectacular initial failure of the healthcare.gov website, having focused the White House's attention on technology issues, the Obama administration is looking to another pool of private sector talent, in this case, Google's, for people willing to bring their professional expertise to new jobs with the government. Now, ding, 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 ding. This paragraph brought up something that I never saw anywhere else. Originally, when that healthcare.gov website crashed and burned and that Kathleen Sebelius got put up in front of Congress and she's like, oh, we don't know. We stole all the code and it doesn't work and I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I mean, are you fucking kidding me? From somebody who built enterprise applications on the web. Okay, if you don't know what the hell you're doing, she should have never been in that job in the first place. But right in conjunction with that big crash and burn, Obama had all of the big tech heads, the CEOs, in Washington. And that I noticed. And I was like, wow, how weird is that? Obama said that he had them there talking about national security initiatives and how we should all be working together. They were all there in Washington saying that they wanted to protect their users' privacy and how awful it is of you, Washington, that you let the NSA spy on everybody. Cover our asses, DC, because our stockholders, and we are public companies, are bitching and we're losing money because they're losing confidence in us. So they did another slick willy, just like they did when they took Microsoft to antitrust and they got Bill Gates. They caught him a deal. He bent over, handed him the back doors, and all was good again in Microsoft land. But back now, let's get back to Washington and the crash and burn of the healthcare.gov website. When that happened, the one story, because I did a story on that on Anti-Media, the one company they mentioned is potentially helping them with their website was going to be Microsoft. They never mentioned Google. I never saw in a story Google. Maybe it was out there. Maybe I missed it. But I had assumed it would be Microsoft with their Cyber Patrol Center capabilities being able to bag, tag, and track everybody on the back end. But this mentioning that they brought in Google to help makes even more sense. We've talked a lot about the electronic medical health records, about this new merger with eMERGE. eMERGE is one of the big genomics databases, and now they are merging those two databases, your electronic medical health records and the genetics that are out there for you, and making one mass dossier. As they bring more and more people into Obamacare that maybe never had health insurance, look at this. We get all the low-income people. My dad and I were talking about this weekend. All the low-income people into the database wanting their health care, getting their DNA tests, and becoming the perfect guinea pigs for R&D, real-time, 21st century medicine. How interesting is that? And understanding that Google has now their Alphabet umbrella and under theirs, their Life Health Sciences division and Calico, you can now see a really scary picture forming. I knew this nationalized healthcare was going to be bad news for you and me. All right. Anyways, let's read that paragraph one more time and then continue with the collaboration and the revolving door between the feds and Google. All right, so back here. Now, there was just a little backgrounder on what I knew about the healthcare.gov site. Now, with the spectacular initial failure of healthcare.gov's website, having focused the White House's attention on technology issues, the Obama administration is looking to another pool of private sector talent, Google's, for people willing to bring the professional expertise to new jobs with the government. Megan Smith, a Google executive, is said to be the White House's top candidate to serve the country's chief technology officer, replacing Todd Park, who has a healthcare information technology background and will work for the administration as an advisor based in Silicon Valley. Park recently helped bring another Google veteran, Michael Mikey Dickerson, to a new area of the executive branch called the U.S. Digital Service. Google's expanding diaspora, I don't think I've ever used that word in a sentence, diaspora in Washington has sparked growing concerns about the company's influence with government officials. What do you think? I mean, I've been calling this shit out since we saw Atlas. I was like, whoa, back up the truck, Chuck. I mean, this is beyond now concern. This is a concern and alarm. Just as the Treasury Department's action in 2008 had implications for Goldman Sachs, many of the questions before federal agencies and lawmakers today, from net neutrality rules to the potential for regulating drone deliveries and self-driving cars. And we talked about that. Drone deliveries are going to be working under now Verizon and NASA. And then I saw the other day there's 100 other commercial companies that are getting in on that game. And self-driving cars, that has become part of that ATAP division with Regina Duggan and DARPA Dan. This could be significant to Google's businesses. Oh, yes, Google's going to make $1 billion. Some of the ex-Googlers hired by the White House already have returned to the public sector. And that's understandable. Not every recruit, especially those who left families behind in Silicon Valley, wants to make a lifelong commitment to Washington or to the government's pay scale. But the revolving door action makes critics all the more skeptical about the relationships between companies and federal offices. And remember the Google story we read yesterday from DARPA Dion had said that they typically have collaborations with universities, PhDs, and smart people for only about 4 to 5 years on projects. All right, let's take a look now at some of these individuals. Megan Smith. Well, she is not part of the White House yet, and let's see what the date on this was. This was August 30th, 2014. So this is over a year ago. I need to verify it, but I'd guarantee that she's probably in there now. I mean, I don't know, honestly. I don't know who. We'll look her up after this. Megan Smith. Well, she is not part of the White House yet, but Smith would be the third person and the first woman to hold the title of U.S. Chief Technology Officer if she gets the job. Wait. Let's just search Federal Chief Technology Officer, because I honestly don't know if it is Megan Smith or not. Megan Smith, in September 2014, she got the job. Good job, Megan. All right, let's go back here. Her ascension, and like how they call that, ascension. Her ascension would represent a major milestone for women in the tech industry. Yes, well, I did it 25 years ago, so screw off there, Megan. Maybe not to the White House, but they just go on and on and on about women breaking into the tech industry. You know what? You just got to know your shit. People always criticize you because you're female, but if you know your shit, they don't even notice anymore. Back at Google, Smith is vice president of Google's X Labs and played a key role in the development of Google Earth. Ooh, how interesting is that? Yes, Google Earth that can pinpoint every single one of us and see into our backyards and our garages. Previously, she was CEO of Planet Out, which was an online media company. I don't know what this has to do with anything. She was an online media company catering to gay and lesbian audiences. Well, okay. Michael had nothing to do with the story. Michael Mikey Dickerson. Dickerson, currently the administrator of the new U.S. Digital Service. And we could take a quick look at that after this. Was pulled into public service when healthcare.gov an integral piece of the Obamacare healthcare insurance system. And yes, a huge piece of getting us all into the database ran into big trouble. And at Google, Dickerson was a site reliability engineer and part of the team that helped Google servers run smoothly. Actually, if that was his job, man, he must be good at what he does. I'm sure their data center is massive beyond anything I've ever even imagined. His task now, work with the federal government's IT teams to improve the functionality of government websites. He's already made waves for turning the West Wing into a business casual zone. He's bringing Silicon Valley to Washington. Administration officials probably don't care what he's wearing to the office so long as he prevents another healthcare.gov style embarrassment from occurring. So, all right, those are two people that we've already heard about. Now we've looked at, but wait, there's more. Katie Jacob Stanton. Before being lured back to the private sector in 2010 for a job at Twitter, so she went from what, Google, to the feds, and then to Twitter. Stanton was part of the White House staff as Director of Citizen Participation. It must be mandatory. And what's interesting, too, is that new psychiatrist position that they're bringing in for the federal government is something like that. Not citizen participation, but citizen belief or citizen spin. They want to be able to interview the people and then spin their programs to get people to accept them, right? Consumer resistance. It's something that we heard about the other day. We have consumer resistance out there to all these new technologies. But anyway, before taking a job for Twitter, she was part of the White House staff as Director of Citizen Participation, tasked with furthering engagement with the public through new media. She then spent 7 months where? Oh, at the State Department. Yes. And I believe 2010, that might have been Hillary Clinton. Yes, yes, yes. The State Department that has been given under the NDAA 2013 legality for using propaganda on its people. Oh, yes. That State Department, where she recently changed roles from Vice President of International Markets to VP of Global Media. At Google, she managed products like Google Finance, Google News, and Blog Search, and was involved in new business development. Stanton helped develop Google Moderator, which allowed users to submit questions for the presidential debates when Obama was running in 2008. Oh, so was Hillary Clinton. And Stanton's resume also includes a stop at Yahoo, and get this, a fellowship at the U.S. Senate Committee on Foreign Relations. Oh, she was groomed very well by her handlers. I mean, come on. When I read that, I'm like, are you kidding me? Who's going to fall for this shit that this chick just fell into her White House job and is now working for Twitter? Yeah. All right, so now let's move on to the next one. Andrew McLaughlin. McLaughlin, formerly Google's head of global public policy, worked on Obama's transition team in 2008 and 2009 and spent 2 years as the administration's deputy chief technology officer. He advised the president on a wide range of topics from cybersecurity and online privacy to entrepreneurship and the creation of open technology standards. And I'm going to tell you, the more I dig into the open standards, and they've been out there forever, it always came down to the university building things like the base of Unix, Linux, or what was the other one that just came out? The GNU open license agreement that then they'll allow you to take the base standards and incorporate it into other software for commercial purposes. also tour was a part of that. Started at the university. The more I dig into that, the more I believe that it's a psyop, by the way. Because the more open technology standards that are out there, and there's a core base of code, the more the feds already have their hands in creating it from the very beginning. Which always leaves the back door window somewhere open. Very ingenious. Anyway, back to Andrew McLaughlin. In 2010, he was reprimanded for exchanging emails with former colleagues still at Google to discuss issues under his purview as a government official. Oh, whoops. In violation of the administration's ethics rules. Now, wait a second. Why did that get him into trouble, but it didn't get Hillary Clinton into trouble? He then left the White House the next year, and he is now a partner at the startup studio BetaWorks and is the CEO of Dig. And I really don't know what those two companies are doing, but he's some sort of partner now. Probably with the White House doing something on the back end. Good old Nicole Wong, nicknamed the Decider, apparently has decided to leave the White House to return to her family in California. Her background was in internet law and privacy issues and made her a strong pick as the administration's deputy chief technology officer amid growing public concern over government data collection. She was formerly legal director at Twitter. Oh, another connection. And she helped author a White House report on big data, which was released in May of 2014, and worked on policies regarding privacy and U.S. intelligence. Oh, how nice. A lawyer working on policies for big data and privacy with U.S. intelligence. Yes, I'm sure she found every loophole, especially with the nickname The Decider. Not only was Wong a vice president at Google, but she was also deputy counsel for the company. So she was Google's lawyer as well, and testified before Congress about Google's adherence to privacy laws. So she knows every friggin' loophole, basically, is what they're saying. Another one, Sonal Shah, the former head of global development at Google.org, which is the company's philanthropic arm. Shah served in the White House from April 2009 to August 2011 as the head of the Office of Social Innovation, aiding nonprofits and entrepreneurs in tackling important social issues. Yes, and they have all of their deep mind study going on now at Google using social media and people's interactions. We have psyops that are fully admitted from intelligence agencies being played out within social media to gauge the public's reaction. And they are using those interactions to help teach artificial intelligence. So, you know, I love the way they just paint this little thing. Oh, yeah, for important social issues, using social media and social innovation. Oh, how wonderful. But there's always the underbelly. Anyway, now Sonal is at Georgetown University with the Beck Center for Social Impact and Innovation. And I bet you she's got some federal dollars there helping her research. Prior to working at Google, she was a VP at Goldman Sachs. Yes. Very good. Very good. And then last but not least, good old Eric Schmidt. While Google's chairman and CEO, and Eric Schmidt was also the one that we played a couple interviews with him with, that nasty, nasty anchor. I don't remember her name, but man, she scares me. Talking about the longevity project and Google's involvement in that. While Google's chairman and CEO, Eric Schmidt doesn't have a formal position in the White House, but he was a strong supporter of Obama in 2008, and his ties with the administration remain strong. He reportedly advised Obama's 2008 campaign in the areas of tech and energy and was on hand again as the informal advisor during the 2012 race. So there you have it. If there was any doubt whatsoever in your mind about collaboration and collusion and a revolving door between the federal government and Google, I hope I dispelled every single ounce of that from your mind. But it gets even better. So while I was visiting my parents this weekend, yes, the TV was on all day, all night, I saw another commercial. And this commercial was for Nest. Nest, this brand new fangled technology that allows you to have a somewhat smart device that's connected in your home for your heating and cooling purposes, as well as some other home automation, your smoke detectors, and now even a security system. And I was like, wait a second, Nest. I'm like, oh my God, that's the company that Google bought. Yes, Google did buy Nest. I remembered last year, February 12th of 2014. But what gets even better is the insane price that Google paid for Nest. And the only other time I remember such a price tag was back when Microsoft purchased Skype from that Dutch company that had owned it. And it was the same amount of money, I'm pretty sure, pretty close there, of Google closes $3.2 billion with a B dollar purchase of Nest. The acquisition brings with it the learning thermostat and the Protect Smoke and Carbon Dioxide Detector, detector, as Google looks to make its mark in the smart home. Now, I can guarantee you that this Nest division is somewhere that Regina Duggan and DARPA Dan touch. It's smart technology. It's now moving into the home. And it is ubiquitous computing. Google has closed the books on its $3.2 billion purchase of Nest Labs. In a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, the search giant said that the deal closed February 7th of 2014. Last month in January, Google revealed that it would acquire the maker of the learning thermostat and the Protect Smoke and Carbon Monoxide Detector as part of its goal to make its mark in smart home systems. We read yesterday, too, they were looking at making smart furniture as well, Google. In its 10K filing, Google revealed a bit more about its plans for Nest. In January 2014, and this is Google's 10K statement, We entered into an agreement to acquire 100% of Nest Labs, Inc., a company whose mission is to reinvent devices in the home, such as thermostats and smoke alarms, for a total purchase price of $3.2 billion in cash, subject to adjustments. Prior to this transaction, we had approximately 12% ownership interest, and I didn't know about that. It was they sprinkled some development dollars in there, which was net against the total consideration. We expect that the acquisition will enhance Google's suite of products and services and allow Nest to continue to innovate upon devices in the home, making them more useful, intuitive, yes, smarter, and thoughtful. Yes, let's have thoughtful devices. Remember when we did the story about enchanted objects? Well, people, enchanted objects are coming soon to a wall mount near you. And we wanted to be able to reach more users. We're in more countries. Yes, global domination. The transaction closed on February 7th of 2014. But here it gets even better. I know, guys, how much more better? How much more better? How much better? How much better can it get? Well, let's fast forward now a few months after the $3.2 billion acquisition of Nest. to June 23rd of 2014. Google's Nest Labs acquisition of Dropcam scares the heck out of me, per Forbes.com. Late last week, news broke that Google Inc.'s Nest Labs would be buying upstart Dropcam in a $555 million cash deal. And for those unfamiliar with the companies, Google purchased Nest Labs earlier this year for approximately $3.2 billion. Nest currently builds intelligent home thermostats and smoke and carbon monoxide detectors, but other home automation products are likely on the horizon. To this point, Google has allowed Nest Labs to operate as its own brand, and the company continues to grow at a steady clip. Dropcam is a provider of easy-to-use and configure Wi-Fi webcams and trackers, as well as cloud-based storage. Oh, let's just plug in another piece. I mean, talk about mega invasive home surveillance, people. We could have cameras and microphones in every single one of these devices. But hey, now we don't even need it, because this Dropcam is going to give you Wi-Fi webcams and dump it all to the cloud. Dropcam owners can check in on their connected cameras from virtually anywhere. And should the user choose, the video feed can be stored in Dropcam's cloud, which, oh, is running on Amazon's Web Services, who also created the parallel cloud for the CIA. Oh, but don't worry about that. To be viewed later. I think it was the CIA or it was the NSA, but I'm pretty sure it was the CIA contracted Amazon to build them an exact duplicate parallel cloud. All right, this author now, this is not my statement. He says, I really dig Nest products and have used a number of their video monitoring devices similar to Dropcams, though I haven't tried an actual Dropcam just yet. The conveniences these products offer are undeniable. Being able to remotely control your home's heating and cooling system and monitor video and audio feeds can not only save you money, but they offer a bit of peace of mind as well. Oh, yes, don't worry about the fact that it's going to spy on you 24/7 to Big Brother directly. No, just buy into the dangling carrot dopamine dose of instant gratification and new toys. And the convenience of things. We actually read that there's an addiction to convenience that they've gotten us all to buy into. That said, instant gratification. I mean, it's just disgusting. And some people are just so blind. And I used to be like this. I embraced every bit of new technology like it was the next biggest, best, greatest thing. It's that whole psychology of keeping up with the Joneses. Bernays. And this is just sick. This might be exactly why Google just hired the director of the National Institute of Mental Health. It's how to spin all this and sell it and keep us buying. It says, on a recent vacation, I checked on my webcams constantly to make sure my house and my pets were okay. Oh, yes. Remember, that whole pet connection releases, what's the chemical that you get when you have a baby? Oxytocin. They found that pets also cause you to release oxytocin. So let's pull on that heartstring. Oh, you could check on your pets when you're away to make sure they're okay. That's why you invest in Google Nest. Hey, that's a good tagline. And that our house /pet sitter was doing everything that we asked. So yes, let's spy on the babysitter too. It was great. But at least he slapped some sense into himself. But there is a problem with all of this, at least in my opinion. And this is him, not me. Assuming that this deal is approved and Google ultimately ends up owning Dropcam, and I guess we can look, but I'm assuming that they did, Google will technically have access to a wealth of data about what goes on in our homes, so we don't need to use that rudimentary 3D Wi-Fi crap anymore. No! We have direct connect to your house. So back to the story. Think about all of this for a moment. If you own a PC and you use Google for search or Chrome as your browser, Gmail, etc., and you also own an Android device and a Nest product and a Dropcam, the data collected by all of these pieces of technology can reveal virtually everything about you. And let's add on to that, have a 23andMe account and did your DNA swab and go to the doctor on your Obamacare and use your little store card when you go buy your Cheetos. Yeah, it's all in a database. Back to the story. Google would know what sites you visit and what you've been searching for, where you are at any given time, assuming you're carrying your smartphone, your contacts, your Wi-Fi passwords, the temperature you like to keep your house at, and the list goes on and on. Yeah, like you're fighting with your girlfriend or your cat is hungry. Heck, technically speaking, Google could theoretically, oh yes, technically speaking, don't they have a freaking patent on this shit? Google could technically listen in on your activities in your home, and I think that's already legal there, Charlie. Not to mention, check out your video feeds as well. Hey, Harry's going to the John, so now's the time to make his refrigerator break. I don't know. I mean, just think about how insane. And then add to this all the other smart devices that are out there. The fact that the Google Smart Division's in bed with Samsung. And Samsung is the number one technology provider for home appliances. All right, back to the story. If you've also got a few Dropcam tabs installed, they'll even be able to tell when certain doors and windows are open or where you've stashed something. Wink. That's scary, if you ask me. Really scary. Oh, you think there, Chuck? Of course it is. And then he even brings up what I've talked about for so many years. Even since my early tech days in the 90s, my friend and I used to argue over this, and he'd go, yeah, but Google's tag is weak. Google is not evil. And I'm like, screw that. Google is evil. Well, this writer says, I am fully aware of Google's, quote, do no evil mantra and could just be being paranoid about this whole situation, but something just doesn't sit right with me. Well, welcome to the club, Clyde. Because no, this isn't good. None of this is good. They have groomed the last two or three generations now, I forget as I get old, to be all right with giving it all up to the machine, to be all right with taking pictures and posting every single thing you eat, every time you walk out of the house or you see a flower or your cat's hacking up a hairball. It's okay to not have any privacy. And so nobody in the younger generation necessarily that's been groomed into this pretend reality, it's been groomed into accepting transhumanism, into accepting 21st century medicine or nanobots, Star Trek robo doctor to fix all that ails you in your blood. They don't see anything wrong with it. Back to the story. I am no technophobe and embrace technology at every chance I get, but giving a single large company, powerful, intelligent, and as aggressive as Google, the means to see, hear, and track every aspect of our lives gives me pause. And I am not saying that Google would do anything nefarious, no, with so many tentacles in our home, but the possibility does exist. And even if it's not the company itself, who knows what shady characters inside Google, or I'm going to add, or, oh, I don't know, federal governments that Google does business with, could do with access to all of that data. I know much of the information Google would be able to mine can be acquired by other means, but that is not the point. If you think technology companies already have access to too much of our data, imagine installing devices in your home that would allow them to check in and see or hear what we're up to at any given time. when Microsoft announced the Xbox One and its updated Kinect sensor, people went nuts. I remember thinking that Microsoft would spy on its users using its Kinect camera and microphone. But Kinect is just one single stationary device that can simply be unplugged or covered. And the amount of diversity of information Google would have access to far exceeds what Microsoft could do with Kinect. Especially if you factor in your web searches, email, your smartphone, and, of course, all of your Nest and Dropcam devices. So there you have it, guys. I mean, talk about some scary shit. So I didn't even make it to where we left off yesterday with the military, the DARPA funding the brain-computer interfaces, and some of this brain research that's going on that ties all into this. You're going to just be a node on the Internet of Things one of these days soon. So don't you forget that. Make sure you bow down and don't have any nasty thoughts there, because they're already working on being able to read minds at a distance. All right, guys, we'll make sure you stick around because it is Tuesday. Mr. Kevin Blanch is live up next. And then we have at 7 p.m. Eastern Game On Live with Ron Stevens. Our interesting time, Random Replay, Tim Kelly at 8, Primer Time Live with Michael and Nick at 9. This week's Geoengineering Watch with Mr. Dane Wigington at 10 p.m. Eastern, and Anti-Media Radio with S.M. Gibson at 11. And that should be an amusing one. S.M. Gibson always has some good guests, and I am not sure what's going on with my bumper. I checked it yesterday, and it was all good, so I'm going to have to sing. All right, it gets scared every time I do that. Everybody have an awesome Tuesday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Yeah.